Bibles torn into pieces, make a fire to distill the secrets. Men hid their duty, so do we, and oh so pretty, cute and wise o'er me glen. Slavery takes many a form. Some are infant when they are born. Serve their masters and pay their taxes. All of them just take a side. All of us just puffed with pride.
I, Balacroy, making magic.
Shush!
It's time for The Shelf. Whanganui District Library's radio on Beagle Radio.
Is now the very witching time of night, when library doors open and the turning of book pages cast sprinkles of magic into this mortal world. Now, here could I find in the stacks such knowledge and such vast power that non-readers quake to look upon me. Soft now to the shelf.
Here it is. Yes, welcome to the shelf. Yeah. That was a delayed thunderclap, but you know, you can't predict that sort of thing.
You can't predict the weather, no.
No, not at all. So, we are a radio show that is promoting library services in Whanganui. I'm a librarian. My name is Andy.
And my name is Carly.
We both work at Whanganui District Libraries. And guess what? Next week is Halloween.
Ooh, Halloween! We've got a special episode today.
Yes, we do. We were a little late to get started, but that's no matter. You can't predict these things, like I said.
No, turns out the radio tech was a bit haunted today, which is very on theme.
Yeah, you know, Halloween is just that time of the year. What can I say?
Yeah. There's a poltergeist at Beagle.
And that's what I think about that. So I do want to just say some rather distressing news. I received a very odd email from Glenn just a week ago. Did you know it was a full moon last Friday?
No, I didn't know. But I haven't seen Glenn in about a week's time. So
yeah, and his email didn't really have words in it. It just looked like someone was whacking the keyboard with a paw, perhaps.
Paw?
And he clicked send.
How odd.
Yes, and then I received this voicemail. I'll just play this for everyone.
First unheard message sent yesterday at 7:15 p.m. End of message. To delete this message, press 7. Message deleted.
And that was that.
How strange.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think Glenn is a werewolf.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the only explanation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a text from LJ too, and it just said, I am a vampire, LOL.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
So,
monsters everywhere.
Yeah, you know, that doesn't sound so bad, though.
No, vampire sounds pretty, yeah.
That could be elegant. Fun. Yeah. You can get some things done. At night, I get things done.
Yeah, I think I want to be a witch today.
Yeah, I'll be a zombie. Well, I just want to talk about Halloween, because I understand Halloween is celebrated in New Zealand, but not as much as America. You don't have the same obsession here as Americans do you?
Not really. I think Halloween for New Zealand, we do celebrate it a little bit, but it's definitely, from what I know, it's more like on-the-day festivities. We do a bit of trick-or-treating, but it's not on every street. We have decorations in the shops, and people seem to buy them, but it's not like the front yard is decorated like where you might have grown up.
Oh, no.
I think the one thing that I really wish we had in New Zealand is the pumpkin farms and pumpkin carving.
And oh, yeah.
I think if anyone wanted to start that up, they'd probably, you know, do big business around this time of year.
Yeah, definitely. I think if Halloween were a thing in New Zealand, it would be in April.
Yeah.
in autumn.
Yeah.
Because What I like to tell people about Halloween in America, especially in Missouri, is that there's a kind of vibe.
Yeah.
How else to describe it? In New Zealand, you're in the southern hemisphere, and the season changes are just opposite for Halloween. So I can see how some people maybe don't appreciate that. Mm. But in Missouri, that's my home state, there is a certain feeling in the air around Halloween. It's autumn in October. The temperature is dropping. The leaves are turning. These beautiful red, orange, and yellow colors and falling from trees, they crunch under your feet while you're walking. Mm. And you can smell the decay from the plants and trees whenever you are outside. It's a beautiful time of year for hiking. The scenery is so cool. I still hear from people that Halloween is such an American holiday, but I have been doing some reading, and we can call this a myth-busting segment, because I have been finding that is completely incorrect.
Oh, okay. So where do they have their roots then? Where does Halloween have its roots?
Well, Halloween is, it can trace its roots back to a harvest festival that the ancient people of Ireland and Britain celebrated called Samhain. It's spelled Samhain. Just different language, different rules. Samhain actually means November in the Irish Gaelic language. But the people of the ancient Celtic peoples, they celebrated Samhain at the end of October and the beginning of November. And this was considered a feast holiday, and it was a harvest also. And it was during this time that the fruit would be stored away and the animals would be cold for winter. And it was also a time of important political assemblies.
Okay.
Yeah, the important tribal assemblies and administrative decisions would be made, and kings could be inaugurated. But it is mainly known for what we know Halloween to be, is that on Samhain, the gates between the land of the living and the other world, with a capital O, would be opened. The other world is the land of spirits and the dead. But that's not necessarily a bad thing in their belief system. They were animists, and they believed that spirits existed all around you. But it could be a bad thing, because the other world was the land of the fair folk also. So fairies, if you read any of the ancient Irish myths, fairies were naughty. They generally didn't do good things.
Oh, my goodness.
They just played tricks on humans and made fools of us all.
Oh, the tricksters.
It was the time when spirits of the dead and demons would mingle with humans.
What about the concept of trick-or-treating? Did that originate at this time?
Actually, at that time, no. Trick-or-treating can trace back to the more Christianized Halloween in the Middle Ages. These traditions really clung on in Northern Europe. I'll just tell you that even when Ireland and Britain were Christian, people still had a very similar tradition. I just want to read a quote from a book that I read about Celtic myths. The book is in our library, and it is called The Book of Celtic Myths. This is on page 221, quote, "In medieval times, as during other feast days, it became customary to spend Samhain night going door to door collecting food and other offerings for the poor, often in exchange for prayers said to the homeowner. However, the Samhain ritual often involved a costumed masquerade." carrying on, some say, in imitation of the fairy procession. If the homeowner gave generously to these masked visitors, the visitors would make a solemn procession around the kitchen fire. a tradition that clearly echoes the ancient Samhain rituals. Were the hosts less than generous, they would be cursed in a similar manner.
Oh, unquote. Dear.
Yeah. Yeah, sound familiar?
Yeah, it does sound a bit familiar.
Yeah, so the moral of the story is if you give nice candy at Halloween, then everybody is happy. If you are nasty to the kids, tell them to go away. You might find toilet paper thrown over your trees the next day. Or someone might pelt eggs at your house. Carly, do people toilet paper houses here?
I haven't ever seen that happen, but I've seen it a lot in the movie, so I think everyone knows the concept of TPing.
TPing is what we called it. I never did it, promise.
Yeah. sure, Andy.
I never threw an egg at a house, but which is called egging. This was going back to the more charitable aspects, where you're giving food to the poor by going house to house. That's actually a very Christian principle. But overall, it comes from an ancient pagan religion that existed there long before written records were kept. I just want to say that the Celts believed that there were portals to the other world, and they could exist at bodies of water like lakes, at henge monuments built by the people long before they arrived in Ireland, and also at the earthen mounds, like the one at Newgrange, Ireland. So with these explanations of Halloween, you can see that there's a kind of formula, or rather symbolism, of the elements, earth, water, air, fire. There would be lighting of bonfires by the Druids. They were the priestly class. And then there was something called the lading of witches, a candlelight procession. If a candle flickered, it didn't mean good things.
Oh,
it
dear.
Meant that person might have a curse on them. But instead of shunning the person, they might try to help them.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I've learned a lot about this today. And definitely is not necessarily an American holiday, then.
No.
The moral of the story.
No, but I think a lot can be said for the fact that, millions of Irish arrived in America at the same time, and they brought their beliefs with them. And, Halloween is, it preserves an ancient Celtic culture that didn't leave written records, but it's in our subconsciouses. It's captured our imaginations and pop culture. The adults get to go to these wild parties, kids get to go trick-or-treating, and the youth get up to mischief.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
There really is something for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is a fun holiday, and who doesn't get that?
Yeah, totally. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that is what I've been reading about for the past month, about Halloween and Celtic myths. If you really want to get into it, there's a lot more to know, and getting into the mythology of a culture is actually really complicated, so I won't dig too much.
Yeah, but what an interesting research topic that could be.
Yeah, we have so many books in the library about this topic, and that's the main point of this. I read these things in library books.
Yeah, library resources.
Yeah.
Awesome. Oh, how cool. Thank you, Andy.
I think we should play a song that I think is kind of Halloween-y. It is called Your Brains by Jonathan Coulton.
All right,
check it out.
Hey, Tom, it's Bob from the office down the hall. It's good to see you, buddy. How have you been? Things have been okay for me, except that I'm a zombie now. Really wish you'd let us in. I think I speak for all of us when I say I understand why you folks might hesitate to submit to our demand. But here's an FYI, you're all gonna
inside and eat your brain. I don't want to nitpick, Tom, but is this really your plan? Spend your whole life locked inside a mall. Maybe that's okay for now, but someday you'll be out of food and guns, and you'll have to make the call. I'm not surprised to see you haven't thought it through enough. You never had the head for all that bigger picture stuff. But Tom, that's what I do, and I plan on eating. I mean, no one's gonna eat your eyes.
All we wanna do is eat your brains.
We're at an impasse here. Maybe we should compromise. Open up the door. We'll all come inside and eat your brains. I'd like to help you, Tom. Guess we'll table this for now. I'm glad to see you take constructive criticism well. Thank you for your time. I know we're all busy as hell. And we'll put this thing to bed when I bash your head open.
All we wanna do is eat your brains.
We're not unreasonable. I mean, no one's gonna eat your eyes.
All we wanna do is eat your brains.
We're at an impasse here. Maybe we should compromise. Open up the doors. We'll all come inside and eat your brains.
Welcome back to the Witching Hour.
You're listening to The Shelf on Beagle 88.1 FM.
That's right. Wrong switch. Here it is. That was the correct switch. That's how you know.
Spooky.
Guess what, Carly?
What's that, Andy?
You already know this because I've been harping on about it for 2 months. But next week, next Thursday, October 31st, Halloween night, I am going to be hosting a movie in the library. And I am very excited because I've been working on this for some time.
Yay!
And the movie is The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Ooh, an early silent movie.
Yes, very early. It was made in 1920.
Ooh, so, over 100 years ago.
Yeah, the concept of a movie back then was still quite new, even though Hollywood did exist. But a lot of the film industry was, at the time, based in Germany. And last year, I played a different movie. I showed Nosferatu, And it was experimental because I had never shown a movie, but I let it stream on Bema Film and drew a crowd, and we had a blast. We ate popcorn, and
it was so fun.
Yeah, there were costumes, and this year I'm showing a different movie, and that is, as I said, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it, so I'm very excited to watch this one. It's been on my watch list, like to be watched list, for a long time.
Well.
But I will be there, and I will be dressed up.
October 31st, 5 p.m., and I'm going to tell you all about it on this show. So now you can learn about this strange movie and why I think it's important.
Cool.
So The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari is a German psychological horror film released in 1920. Many critics and film historians call this the first horror movie. Or at least the first feature-length horror movie. Roger Ebert called it the first true horror movie. In my last viewing of the movie, I made a list of the different elements that I saw that are in modern horror films. And that's all in this one, in Caligari. There is the killer's slow walk that you see in slasher movies, like Halloween. There's the creepy shadows, like Nosferatu. There's the arms extended outward with expressionless looks, like zombie movies, or Frankenstein. There's the eerie set design, with a distorted feeling of reality, and it's very dreamy, like Tim Burton movies. And then there's the mad scientist, like Frankenstein, and the misunderstood monster, like Frankenstein's monster. And lastly, there's an ambiguous twist. Caligari was the first German expressionist film, and that means that it has a very dreamlike, unclear reality. Britannica defines German expressionism as an artistic style in which the artist seeks to depict not objective reality, but rather the subjective emotions and responses that objects and events arouse within a person. And the artist accomplishes this through distortion, exaggeration, primitivism, and fantasy, and through the vivid, jarring, violent, and dynamic applications of formal elements, unquote. That's a long one. But watch the movie, you'll know what I mean. Everything's all bent and
funny angles.
Funny angles, yeah. Like a theater set in a Tim Burton movie. And Michael Mallory, in his book Essential Horror Movies, says the film set's designs contain virtually no straight lines or right angles. Watch the movie, see what I mean. The film was made in a very unique time in German history. I've been reading a lot about this time. Germany had just lost World War I. There were more than 2 million military deaths and 4 million wounded in the German Empire. And the Empire no longer existed. The Weimar Republic was the name of the German government from the end of World War I in 1918. That's the end of the German Empire, until the beginning of Nazi Germany in 1933. So the Weimar Republic was very short-lived. I looked it up on the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum's website, in which they have an encyclopedia. And they said the Weimar era was characterized by, quote, political turmoil and violence, economic hardship, and also new social freedoms and vibrant artistic movements characterized the complex Weimar period. Many of the challenges of this era set the stage for Hitler's rise to power, unquote. So what happened after the failure of the Weimar Republic? The rise of the Nazis, World War II, the Holocaust, is much worse than any horror film. In terms of culture, though, the Weimar era was very socially liberal and saw many changes in German society. Women earned the right to vote. LGBTQ culture thrived. Jews gained more economic and social freedoms, leading to resentment and scapegoating later. And then there's the sciences. Albert Einstein earned a Nobel Prize, along with many other German scientists. And the burgeoning film industry put Germany on the world stage to compete with Hollywood. And Hollywood had been around for about 20 years at the time, so they were solidifying their place in movie history. So why is this all relevant? The director, Robert Vigney, he was Jewish. The actor who played Alan, his name was Hans Heinrich von Twardowski. He was gay. Conrad Veidt, who played Caesar, was a very big critic of the Nazis, and he was also married to a Jewish woman. And he also liked to wear dresses. In fact, one of his wives divorced him after she caught him wearing one of her favorite dresses. So these were the unique reasons that these people fled Germany before the Nazis took power. They had many good reasons to get away. Well, where are they now? Or rather, what happened next? You cannot talk about German silent film without talking about what happened afterwards to the actors and directors because of World War II. The director, Robert Vigney, was born in 1873 in modern-day Poland. He was of Jewish descent. He fled Germany after the Nazis took power. One of his films had been banned by the Nazis, so his future in Germany was very uncertain. He left for Budapest and later moved to London and then Paris. He was working on a sound version of The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. But sadly, his health declined, and he died of cancer in Paris in 1938 at 65. Mm. Only 20 out of 90 of his films still exist.
Oh, my gosh.
And then there's Werner Krauss, the actor who portrayed the mad scientist Caligari. Well, he was actually worse than the character he played in the movie. He was a Nazi collaborator. He was appointed the cultural ambassador to Nazi Germany, and he made a living portraying stereotypical Jews in Nazi propaganda films and plays. He died in obscurity in 1959, and the less we say about him, the better. And then there's Conrad Veidt, the actor who plays Caesar in the film. Conrad Veidt was a mensch. He was a great man. He was the actor who played Caesar. Oh, I already said that. He was born in Berlin in 1893. Caligari made him an international star, and he found roles in the U.S. and England. He is in a great film called The Man Who Laughs. The Man Who Laughs was, if you look at the picture of him, that's the inspiration for the Joker in the Batman comics. Anyway, Veidt fled Germany in 1933 with his Jewish wife, Lily Prager, and became a British citizen moving to Hollywood, California. He was a defiant opponent of the Third Reich and became an advocate for German actors in England during the late 30s. They were being accused of being foreign agents. One of his friends, Paul Heinrich, a German actor and anti-fascist, he was going to be deported as the British government was rounding up German, Austrian, and Italian citizens. But Conrad Veidt helped convince the British government to stop his deportation. And I learned that in a book about Casablanca. That's because Conrad Veidt was in the movie Casablanca.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. He moved to Hollywood and he was a staunch anti-fascist. And he played a Nazi in his most famous role in American cinema, in Casablanca. He was typecasted as a Nazi, but he was okay with this. He insisted on playing Nazis because he felt that that was the best way to fight Nazis, through art, and portray them as villains. Sadly, he died of a heart attack in 1943, shortly after Casablanca was released. Another actor from this film, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, he played a small role in Casablanca, and that was Hans Heinrich von Twardowski. He fled Germany before the Nazis took power. He was openly gay, and that gave him a great reason to flee. And he played the role of Alan in the film. but he was mostly a stage actor. One film historian calls The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari a metaphor for the Great War. This is a quote. A metaphor for the Great War has Caligari representing the government that controls the will of its people. And that was Ronald Bergen in his film, in his book, The Film Book. And then Robert Horton of the Goethe Institute said, The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari is like a predictor for the Third Reich, how one person can impose his will upon others in a hypnotic state to do his bidding. And that is from the Goethe Institute website. Indeed, this movie is disturbing on its own, but the subtext and background are more horrifying than any horror film.
Yeah.
And I'm showing it because I think it is historically significant.
Yeah.
The background story is fascinating. Everything I've been reading the past 2 months has shown that. And it's also just a good film.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Andy, for that deep dive into the history of behind the making or the people who made the film. I never knew any of that, so yeah, thank you so much for doing that research and also for putting on the movie next week. I'm really, really excited to see it, especially knowing the context behind it now. So
yeah, that's October 31st, Central Library, in the May Bain Room at 5 p.m.
Yeah, and you can dress up in costume if you want to get into the Halloween spirit.
Yeah.
Yep.
No booking and no cost. Yep. Just show up early to claim a seat, and I might even play a cartoon before the movie.
Oh, cool. Awesome.
Yeah, like in the old days. Oh, and we might even have someone perform music.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, a new addition to the...
Yeah, I'm going to give him a phone call today, and we'll see what can happen. And it's exciting, but... In the old days, they used to play live music at silent films.
Yeah. So if we can get that, that'll be a real treat.
Most definitely. Thank you for your time listening to my promo.
Yeah. Thank you. That was really awesome. Well said. Well researched.
Well, let's just talk about horror movies in general. Before the show, I made a list of some of my favorite horror movies, and Carly's going to talk about the horror genre, because it all starts with books, am I right?
Yeah, it does. Yep, so the horror genre, be it books or movies, is designed to scare you, to shock you, to disturb you. It specifically pulls a big emotional response from you. There are a number of subcategories in this genre, such as supernatural, slasher, gothic, and psychological, to name a few. And I believe the best books and movies use familiar tropes, like some of the ones Andy mentioned earlier, and flip them or subvert them in some way. So horror movie techniques include jump scares, found footage, twist endings, the characters saying this phrase, "Let's split up."
Or "I'll be right back."
"I'll be right back." And the audience yelling the phrase, "Don't go in there."
Yeah.
"Don't go down there."
Everything will be fine.
Yeah, everything will be fine. Next minute. Horror is a way to explore big themes, particularly of the period it was written in. So like Andy's movie that he's showing next week, exists in the context that it was made in. So as the same for literary horror. So the 18th century Gothic horror explored themes of death, such as in Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven.
Yeah.
In the 19th century, the focus shifted to the occult, examples being Dracula. Mary Shelley changed the game by demonstrating humans as the real monsters, which is a theme that's still being explored today. She's also generally credited for bringing in the pseudoscience element to horror novels. In the 20th century to today, social commentary on things like mass media and racial inequalities are big themes. The horror genre has a way to explicitly or subliminally comment on humanity and our own ethics and morality. Almost always monsters and scenarios are subtly made to reflect our fears and of the other or of the unknown or et cetera. So famous horror novels include The Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde, 1890, if you count that as a horror. Yeah. Dracula by Bram Stoker, 1897. The Haunting of Hill House, 1959. We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson, 1962.
Great book.
Interview with the Vampire by Anne Rice, 1976. The Shining by Stephen King, 1977. Beloved by Toni Morrison, 1987, and so much more.
Oh, yeah. I will admit that I haven't read very many horror novels. You mentioned We Have Always Lived in a Castle.
Mm.
That's a good psychological story. I've read Dracula, and when I was about 14, I read Pet Sematary.
Oh, yeah.
And I became a big critic of the movies because I love the book. sometimes a book connects.
Yeah.
I recently read H.P. Lovecraft's short stories.
Oh, yeah.
There was At the Mountain of Madness, At the Mountains of Madness, and The Call of Cthulhu. So, some kind of cosmic horror.
Oh, cool. There's another subgenre, cosmic horror.
Yeah. All about how there could be this horrifying thing that you're facing, and it's too big for you to comprehend. But I think it all started for me with Goosebumps, like a lot of millennials.
Yeah. And we've got a lot of Goosebumps novels, like, for the kids still in the library, actually, if that's something the millennials want to pass on to their kids, so...
We do, yeah. The Haunted Mask was maybe the first one I read, and I love the Night of the Living Dummy books, because he comes to life at night. He's a little a ventriloquist puppet, and I don't think he kills anyone, but he might, you know, ruin your day. He wrecks some girl's art project. You could just throw him across the room, but nobody thinks to do that.
Of course not. It'd be too obvious.
Yeah.
Should we talk about horror movies? Because I know we're both big on horror movies. So should we just go, one by one, saying some of our favorites?
Sure.
Where to begin? So this is in no particular order, because I can't even rank them. One of mine is... Scream, 1996, directed by Wes Craven. I love the whole original series of Scream.
Okay.
And that's very meta, so they talk about specifically, in the, like, that's a meta-textual about the horror genre, and they list the tropes and then kind of subvert them.
Yeah.
And like, it's really good. So if you haven't seen that, watch that one.
Oh, I have. I love it. I chose The Witch. I think that came out in 2015, starring Anya Taylor-Joy, who I think was a very new actress. Anyway, The Witch is, you could call it folk horror. It's all about this family in the middle of the forest in New England in the 17th century. And they're all alone in the forest with a witch.
Oh, dear. Yep, that's on my to-watch list as well.
It's terrifying.
One of mine... Oh, okay. Here's one that's actually randomly a comfort movie for me. I watch every year. But this is going to sound weird when I actually say what it is. Silence of the Lambs.
Oh,
1991. Jonathan Demme. Is that how you say his last name? Demme?
I think so. Yeah.
Such a good movie. That's... Yeah,
it's a great movie in its own right.
Yeah, that's the Hannibal Lecter. It's so good. It rubs the lotion on its skin.
Oh, God.
So that's one of mine. What's one of yours?
I wrote Young Frankenstein.
Oh, horror comedy.
You mentioned horror comedy. You mentioned... Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, and what's funny is that I watched the Frankenstein movie from the 30s, and I hated it. It was not scary. It's a very old movie, but hasn't aged well. But what I know about Frankenstein seems to come from a Mel Brooks movie. Young Frankenstein. It stars, what's the Willy Wonka guy's name?
Gene Wilder.
Yeah, Gene Wilder.
Love Gene Wilder.
Peter Boyle, and others.
Yeah. Oh, can you know the putting on the Ritz bit? When you're blue, you don't know where to go to, what don't you go where fashion sits.
Yeah.
Putting on the Ritz.
So good. Yeah, definitely watch that one. And okay, back to me. I really like all of Jordan Peele's like three latest horror movies, but my favorite one is actually, well, Get Out's awesome, but Nope,
okay.
Which is the alien invasion one, but I won't spoil it too much further than that. But that was a couple of years ago, I think.
Yeah.
2022 or something like that.
Yeah, it's very new.
Nope. Yeah, so that's a fantastic one.
I'm going to throw in a haunted house movie.
Oh.
Insidious.
Oh, I've never seen Insidious.
Mm.
Okay, gotta watch that.
Give it a try.
I like the original and the remakes of the Halloween series by John Carpenter. The original came out in 1978.
Yeah.
I love it, and I love the soundtrack around Halloween time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great one.
I wish I had a little piano. I think I still know how to play it. I like the movie Hereditary. Even though I think this is a movie that will disturb you more than scare you.
Yeah. I could, disclaimer, I couldn't finish Hereditary, but yeah, it's a very well-loved horror movie. One that I watched this year, Long Legs. Directed by Osgood Perkins, who is the son of Anthony Perkins, who was the main guy in Psycho. So, that was this year. Long Legs starring Nicolas Cage. Freaky.
Okay.
And it's, I guess, a little bit divisive, but I'm on the side that loves this movie.
Okay. All right. Next choice. I want to say... I recently watched a movie that I liked a lot. It was called Late Night with the Devil. And it was just on Netflix. I didn't read any reviews, so people are welcome to disagree. But I would put it in found footage horror.
Oh, cool.
Because it is supposed to be like a documentary. But it takes place during a late night talk show like David Letterman. And... he brings on a possessed child onto his show.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yep, I've got to watch that one, too. I think I've got my last one on here, The Shining, Stanley Kubrick, 1980. Oh. Love The Shining and Dr. Sleep, actually, which was the sequel made in 2019 by Mike Flanagan, who's also making a whole lot of cool horror movies and shows on Netflix, including The Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah.
Dr. Sleep was the sequel that you wouldn't think would have lived up to the hype of the original, but it nailed it, in my opinion.
I'm going to just throw out one more. Babadook.
Oh, no, I haven't watched it. Oh, but I want to.
It is on, I think it's on Bema Film.
Oh, cool.
I think.
Yeah, and this is an Australian-made movie, right?
It's Australian, yeah. I don't want to say too much, but they made fun of it on The Simpsons a couple of years ago.
Oh, dang.
Yes. Is that a spoiler? Not really.
Actually, Simpsons Treehouse of Horror episodes are also a good recommendation.
I still love them.
Yeah.
Oh, the Toy Story parody was great. Anyway.
Awesome. Okay, so those are our recommendations. Let us know if you have any more that you think should be recommended to people. I'm sure we've missed out a whole lot, but... those are our top faves. Okay, so next up, we're going to bring back...
We're going to bring back an old segment, Roasting the Classics.
Yay!
So we chose a horror novel. Can you guess what it is? Dracula. Bram Stoker's novel, 1897 novel, Dracula. So this novel... pioneered the whole horror genre, a whole new horror genre, and it laid a foundation for vampire lore in books and movies. It's without a doubt the most well-known horror novel. Dracula's style is more important to the horror genre than one may think. Mm. It is a book compiled of letters, diary entries, newspaper articles, I think a government report, and one very famous captain's log. It is the original story made up of found footage. So, think of the Blair Witch Project.
Yeah.
Or, that other one. Paranormal Activity. So, even though it is a classic, some readers disagreed. We usually do this segment with bad reviews on Goodreads, and I'll just summarize the novel from a dissatisfied reader. Quote, Dracula is a spooky story which begins with Jonathan Harker, an attorney who travels to Transylvania to help his client, Count Dracula, purchase land in London. However, Dracula is behaving strangely. Will Jonathan make it out alive? Holy smokes, this book is boring. No wonder there are so many Dracula books and movies, because almost anyone could have done it better.
Ooh, roasted. Okay, here's a further summary from another reviewer. There were random chapters about Dracula killing people somewhere, and random chapters about our good Christian girl Mina, where she does nothing but talk about how she loves and misses Jonathan. And there is Jonathan, who kind of does nothing the majority of the story, and just goes along with the Van Helsing guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's about right.
Maybe.
The first 50 pages of the book are all about Jonathan and Dracula's castle. And then, yes, he does very little. The next review says, I was rather disappointed by this classic. It started out with promise, especially the Jonathan Harker bits. Then all the male characters descended into blubbering worshippers of the two female characters. And by the end of the novel, I was wishing Dracula could snack on all of them and be done with it.
Oh my gosh. Oh, here's a good one. The characters talk like Yoda from Star Wars. From Star Wars.
Yeah, it says here Star War.
Yeah. I don't know about that, but maybe.
We leave in typos when we do this. The whole storyline just consists of convoluted journal entries. The fact that certain characters, such as Mina and Renfield, are able to read the Count's mind just constitutes a deep-seated flaw in Stoker's narrative style.
Ooh. The virtue of manliness, the horror of female carnality, the constant weeping, the expressive nostrils. The latter half of the book is like one long cornpone. Homily intermixed with my dear friends, an absurd amount of regurgitation, the manly weeping, and the nostrils of deep feeling. Terrible!
That one's a little unhinged. Cornpone homily. Add that to the Oxford Dictionary.
Yeah.
It's written through several characters' diaries, and it just makes the entire book drag and seem like a lot of Victorian whining and hand-wringing. So don't read this if you're looking for any cool vampire stuff.
Oh, boom, roasted.
I will never... I don't like saying don't read this. I don't like saying that.
I really love Dracula, so there I kind of disagree with all of these. I remember, I loved it when I read it. It was probably quite a while ago now, but I really especially loved the second half where it turned into almost like an action-y chase at the end. So, it was good.
I read it.
Atmospheric and
I read it in scary. High school, and I liked it because, I really liked the movies, but here was the original source. And yes, there were some kind of action sequences with Quincy, character, the guy from Texas.
Yeah.
Guy who runs an asylum. And this movie has spawned so many other movies and books and even mixed genres, comedies, Where to begin? There's Nosferatu, which ended in a lawsuit. Yep. There's Dracula with Bela Lugosi, which is quite different from the book. Mm. Oh, what's next?
The Francis Ford Coppola Dracula. Bram Stoker's Dracula
with Keanu Reeves. His acting is phenomenal. And all the other vampire movies after that probably started here. Interview with the Vampire, maybe Twilight, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure she'll claim credit, but yeah.
Oh, and did you know this December there will be a remake of Nosferatu?
Oh, yes, I'm looking forward to this one. Yeah. Like, I've seen a little bit, some of the photos have come out from the movie. It looks really good.
It does.
Don't want to jinx it.
Well, I think we're nearly out of time. So I think we're going to, do we have time to do the old? In the library, we have a book of magic spells. Carly and I were really eager to do one of them, but we simply do not have time.
Yeah.
However, the book is called Celtic Lore and Spellcraft of the Dark Goddess. And it says in here, going back to the history of Halloween, that in one of the magic spells you use apples. And it says here, apples were both a symbol of sustenance of the earth and were connected to the Celtic otherworlds. And around Halloween, you've got...
Yeah, you got toffee apples.
Yeah, caramel apples, bobbing for apples. You can tie a string to the stem and hang it from a tree and try to eat it. It's very hard.
Okay, we might have to give that a go.
Yeah, but that is from this book of spellcraft. And in the back of the book, there's a Samhain ritual in which you can say something nice to someone who has passed on. We have books on spellcraft in the library, and they're quite interesting.
Yeah, so if you're feeling witchy... Yeah. Come on to the library. We don't necessarily, we're not practices of of witchcraft ourselves, but, it's interesting to look at them and,
definitely.
And do a little spell.
Well, thank you all very much. Yes, as we said, next Thursday, October 31st.
Yes, movie night.
Yeah, just look it up on our website. I think perhaps we could end with a song.
Yep, so we'll play a little Oingo Boingo for you as we roll out. But happy Halloween, everyone. We hope you have a safe and yummy Halloween. Enjoy your trick-or-treating and enjoy the movie at the library.
And brush your teeth after the candy.
Good tip.